Good morning. You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA, Real Life with Jennifer Till, brought to you by Virginia National Bank. And Real Life is the radio show that's dedicated to women who are ready to love life and make joy a part of the daily dialogue. I don't know about you, but I've had a busy week. It's been a week filled with family and friends and work and dentist appointments and workouts and writing and meditating. This week, I found myself crying a little and laughing more than that. And so I invite you to join me in a cup of coffee or tea this morning. I am having some green tea. Find a quiet place and let the next 60 minutes be a way to show yourself some kindness. It's a subject with which most of us in the Western world are extremely uncomfortable. It's a subject that many do everything they can to avoid. It's the subject of dying and death. And yet my guest this morning, Bodhi B., who is the spiritual and executive director of Doorway into Light, is committed to changing that culture because he and his group believe that this unwholesome relationship with death has led to an unhealthy relationship with life and the life of the world we live in. According to the website, Doorway into Light is founded on the essential truth that the death of our bodies is a sacred and spiritual passage. We are dedicated to elevating the process of death and dying back into the realm of sacred work, empowering, educating, and supporting families and communities on their rights and choices for the dying, and helping to heal this culture's relationship to aging, dying, and death. Good morning, Bodhi.
Good morning, Jennifer.
Thank you. Bodhi is joining us this morning from Maui, and I recognize that you are allowing this our conversation this morning to take the place of your regular bike ride. So I really do appreciate that.
You're very welcome. You said everybody's so very busy. Well, everybody I know is really busy.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone who's not busy.
Yeah. I'm glad that you take the time. You make the time to ride your bike.
I have to. If I don't take care of my my body and my mental stuff gets really worked out on the bike. I'm not as useful. I'm not as in balance in the world, in my work.
What does balance look like to you? I love starting there.
It looks like I recognize the importance of my physical, emotional, and spiritual health, that I'm engaged in work that feels purposeful to me, that I make time for my wife and my myself, that I have alone time. I make time for my kids and my granddaughter, and I make time more important than money. I make sure and have a deep inner relationship with spirit, with God, and I do my best, or do my best to do my best.
Wow.
Something like that.
Yeah, I really recognize and appreciate that you know what's most important to you and that you are very aware of keeping it important.
When I look at the environmental issues, the social issues, the planetary issues, the political issues, and they all really, to me anyway, come back to transforming human consciousness, that's where it has to start, that any shift is going to take a shift in human consciousness to pull it off, that we're not going to get out of the mess we've created from the same mindset, from the same level of understanding and consciousness. And Joanna Macy talks about the great turning, and that engaging in this great turning, there's three pieces where you can engage in this great turning, and one is the people who are on the front lines, who are the Greenpeace people, the Sea Shepherd people, the activists, the people that are blocking the trains full of nuclear arms, those kind of things. That's one arm of the work we're all doing. The second arm is the arm of this creating this new culture. Solar technology, you know, becoming less of a consumer, simplifying your life, growing food, all the new technologies that are sustainable, that are life-giving. That's the second arm. And the third arm is the transformation of consciousness, because it won't matter if we're all driving around in electric cars eating organic food if we're still angry at each other and cutting each other off on the road and still recognizing ourselves as separate, isolated individuals. And so many, many of us, and I'm sure many of the people listening to your show, are engaged in one or more of those outreach or arms of the work that needs to be done right now.
Bodhi, the work that you're doing around death and dying, which of the arms would you say is represented in your work with that?
Well, I'd say all three, really. I mean, first and foremost, it's I want to help people reframe and relook at the importance of having a relationship with death, that you can't live a wholeful life without engaging in grieving and grieving the fact that everything is going to die, everything. So at the bottom is the transformation of our consciousness through healing our relationship with death, in order to really live a wholeful life. But the other arm of creating new technologies, well, I'm out here actually offering home funerals and direct cremations, and I'm working on building a green nature conservancy cemetery because the old model of cemetery, that model doesn't work, and it's a toxic one. And I'm working on transforming the funeral industry, which is it's about taking it away from institutions and industries. So in that sense, I'm working on not necessarily a new road. Maybe it's a road that's been cultivated for thousands of years that we've only kind of gotten off of in the last 100, 150 years. So in that sense, I want to transform what happens when people are dying and after they die. And then the third piece, well, I'm an activist in the sense that I'm certainly out in the community promoting a new way and a different way than the current one. And most people have a story to tell about their unfortunate experience at the funeral home. Mm-hmm. Even though there's many, many funeral homes run by beautiful people, well-meaning people, family-run funeral homes, but there are two or three major corporations that have taken over a large part of the funeral industry and the coffin-making industry and et cetera. So I think that answers it a little bit.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA, Real Life with Jennifer Till, brought to you by Virginia National Bank. And if you're just joining us this morning, I am joined by Bodhi B., who is calling in to our show this morning from Maui. And Bodhi is an all-around great guy, but in addition to that, he's also an organic gardener and lives off the grid with his wife. And he's a homesteader, a writer, and a musician. And Bodhi has been devoting his life into transforming our relationship with death and dying through his organization, Doorway into Light.
I would say this is the last 12 years, I've been an interfaith ordained minister for about 25 years. In the last about 12, 15 years ago, people started asking me for support around people who are dying, sitting at the bedside, speaking with families of people who are dying, facilitating at memorials and funerals. And I realized I didn't know enough. I didn't feel skilled or trained enough. So I went and became a hospice volunteer and took their volunteer training, which was transformative in itself. It was amazing. And I would encourage anyone to take the training, whether they thought they were going to be sitting at the bedside of dying people or not. So then I started sitting at the bedsides of people who were dying and sitting with their families and seeing how people were dying firsthand. And that was also quite transformative for me and led me to Doorway into Light, which is really about encompassing this whole piece of end-of-life care and after-death care and transforming it and really bringing in, one, the spiritual care piece, and two, really encouraging and supporting families and communities to step up to what I consider community work and sacred and powerful work, and work we've really given away in the last 100 years. Funeral homes kind of came into being quite a little bit after the Civil War, and that's when embalming really started in America and during the Civil War, and that's when the funeral homes started happening, and we started we gave it over to experts, or somehow we were giving it away.
So
we've given it away now for about 100 years. We've asked other people to do it. When somebody dies in a hospital, the body's usually taken away right away. The family doesn't get a lot of time to spend with the body. Hospitals don't want dead bodies around. And even at home, somebody dies, a family member usually right away wants the body gone. And so usually the next time we see that body, it's either embalmed, quite unnatural looking in most cases, or it's been turned to ashes. And there's a whole gap in our grieving, in our living with this dying, that happens because we've given something away. And we've robbed ourselves. And we've robbed ourselves of important community work in terms of community building. And the same with caring for people. Can I go on with this for another minute?
Absolutely. Please.
Okay. You know, so many of us don't live near our parents or our children. And so many of us have bought into this generation of, I don't want to have to change my lifestyle to care for my parents. Let's put them in a home, assisted living, where they'll be better cared for. Well, nobody's going to care for your parents as well as you are. It's just not going to happen, even though many of these people are very well-meaning people. And so we've given this away, and it's changed us. It's disconnected us not only from people who are dying. It's disconnected us from the ancestors. It's disconnected us from ourselves.
Bodhi, what is the what does the realized vision of bringing the work of community and family back to its rightful owners actually look like? What are we doing as family and community in the dying and the death process?
What it looks like is something like this. Somebody calls me up and says, "Hey, would you meet this friend of mine who's found out she's dying?" And I go meet with this person, and let's say it's a woman, and I find out, you know, where is she at? What does she want? What is she looking for? What does she need? Well, in some cases, what she needs is care. Physical care. She needs people to help her get to the doctor, help her buy groceries, help her clean her house, help her cook food. And maybe down the road she needs help getting in and out of bed and taking her medication. And maybe down the road she needs help having her butt wiped and her diapers changed. And so I don't want to create another organization that does that. What happens in those situations sometimes is I want to know who her friends are. I want to contact her friends. I want to help her friends organize a group of her community to step up to taking care of her. So that now I've seen that happen a number of times where 30 or 40 people are doing everything from picking up the mail to everything else, to overnight, to sleeping at the home overnight, to making sure this person doesn't get out of bed unattended, so that the community itself is engaged in care. Hospice does a great job, beautiful job, but hospice can only do so much, and they're not going to provide 24-hour care. And 24-hour care is expensive. And
yeah.
And then there's spiritual care. There's what wants to get worked out. You know, if it is a sacred passage, what wants to be finished? What work, what soul work needs to be done before somebody actually dies, and community, family, close friends can help with that, because there is so much to do, and because we approach this death thing in such different ways. I mean, in this culture, the underpinnings of this culture basically say that either death is a mistake, death is a failure, or variations on if I'm dying, I'm being punished. I did something wrong. Now, in the Bible, the wages of sin is death. I mean, right, just flat out, hey, you definitely did something wrong, which is why so many people lying on their deathbed need to be forgiven, need to feel forgiveness. And even in New Age thought, people feel like, how did you create your cancer? Kind of absurdities that further think you did something wrong, that you got sick. So, you know, then what happens? Because there's a huge gap, there's a huge difference between pain and suffering. And pain, Western medicine has made huge strides in palliative care to where most people don't die in pain, even if they're at home. But then what happens is people aren't in pain, and so then they get to really face their suffering. Well, what are people suffering about? Well, people are suffering about all kinds of things. People are suffering about their regrets about how they lived their life. Did they live a life of purpose? You know, did they add value to their community? Did they spend too much time at their jobs? Did they live a life true to themselves? Were they honest with people? Or did they just try to keep peace and didn't live the life they really wanted to live and gave up all their dreams? And did they work too hard? Did they honestly express themselves and live the life they wanted to live? Did they become the people they wanted to become? Did they stay in touch with people who were important to them? Did they live that, were they happy? You know, when you realize happiness is a choice and you realize, God, I was pretty miserable most of my life, you know, all of that stuff can cause tremendous suffering. Then if you have unfinished business with people, and maybe your kids, you know, you need to say you're sorry to your kids, or you need to ask forgiveness, or forgive them, or friends, or family, or, you know, you need to say thank you to someone you wish you'd said thank you to 5 years ago, or you didn't tell someone you love them, and it would, you know, those kind of things. If that stuff tends to haunt people when they're not in pain, and all of a sudden all that stuff's right in their face when they're looking at their own death, especially in our culture where people think death is the end. They're going to fall off this cliff because science hasn't proven to us what happens after death. So most people just think it's the big void and it's the end. And so they're coming up to the end with all this unresolved business and tremendous suffering. And that's where spiritual care and good counsel and loving presence and compassion and the ability to really listen, can be incredibly powerful gifts to somebody in that space. And especially if you're not the wife or the husband and you don't have any history with this person, a lot of times that's you become the person they can talk to. There's so much to it, and so much to it.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA, Real Life with Jennifer Till, brought to you by Virginia National Bank. And this morning, Bodhi B. is joining us from Maui. And Bodhi is the spiritual and executive director of Doorway into Light. And they are committed to changing the relationship that our culture currently has with death and dying, and maybe bringing it back to what it was 100 or couple of hundred years ago. Bodhi, boy, you just said a whole lot, and we're going to need to take a short break in just a couple of minutes. But something that you talked about really stands out for me is the idea of forgiveness. And around forgiving ourselves, I think that's probably the hardest place to look for forgiveness. And then working in healing with the family. I'm also thinking about sometimes there may be a gap between what the dying person needs or wants and what the family is willing to step up to. Can you talk about that?
Well, we've certainly seen that family members around somebody that's dying get very uncomfortable if it looks like the dying person is in pain or suffering, and tend to want to medicate that person to spare them the pain and suffering. And sometimes they're more uncomfortable than the dying person is, so that brings up some of their issues around death, and certainly everybody's grieving. everybody's grieving, and so then the grieving that gets stimulated in watching a loved one dies usually stimulates all this other grief that we're carrying but kind of have stuffed somewhere. I mean, how many of us are grieving having lost a career, you know, when our company downsized? Or how many of us are grieving that we can't do something physically we did so well 30 years ago? How many of us are grieving lost relationships that fell apart, you know, divorces and, you know, ends of relationships, on and on and on? How many of us are collectively grieving the condition of the earth itself right now and some of the things our government does in our name? There is this grief that we carry because we do know that everyone around us will die and that we will die, because that's what happens. Our marriage will end. One of us will die. Our children will die, hopefully not before us. Everyone we know will die. Everything is, you know, if you live close to nature, you see that it's happening, that life and death are interwoven. It's happening all at once, everywhere, and that the life and death are interconnected, and that life wouldn't happen without the death. And so then there's the family gets into this situation, and everybody's got their unconscious fears around death itself and what happens. And so then there's lots of agendas around trying to save someone from dying, really. And there's that piece. And then a forgiveness, well, you hit it on the head. I think the forgiveness of self is by far the biggest forgiveness, because most of us feel like, or most people when they're dying, to me, looks like they feel like they blew it.
Bowie.
And that goes back to these regrets that you didn't live, you know, the life you came here to live.
Right.
And so then, there's all the shadow stuff of what we did wrong that we don't want anyone to know about. But of course, we know God knows exactly all of that stuff, and we feel ashamed and judged, self-judged, and that stuff is sitting there cooking at the end, because what are we going to do with that? And so there's this tremendous feeling of needing to be forgiven.
Bowie, we need this. I want to keep going down this line of conversation, but we do need to take a short break. So stay tuned for the second half of the show, because my guest, Bowie B., who is the director, spiritual director and executive director of Doorway into Light, will be back. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA, Real Life with Jennifer Till, brought to you by Virginia National Bank. And this morning, Bowie B., who is many, many wonderful things, among which are he's an ordained minister, he's a homesteader and organic gardener off the grid, he's a writer, he's a wonderful musician, and he is also the spiritual and executive director of Doorway into Light. Bodhi, would you...
I'm a pretty good husband and father and grandfather.
Good. Thank you for putting that in there. That's maybe most important. Would you lead us in a short practice this morning?
Okay.
Thank you.
So most of us tend to be leaning forward in our lives. What's next? What's coming? We want to know what's happening. We want to know what's coming. It's going to be better in the next moment. So what I'd invite you all to do at this moment is to kind of pull back all the way into this very moment, into this very next breath, and feel yourselves wherever you are, sitting or standing. Feel your feet on the ground. Feel how, even if you're not on the earth, that you are connected to the earth. The earth is holding us up. You're connected to everyone on the earth right now. And breathe. And feel the breath as it comes into your belly and making your belly nice and big, nice relaxed breath. And feel the heart beating blood, knowing that there are billions of things going on in your body to make it work just so you can breathe in this very moment. And breathing and letting go of what's on your plate and letting go of what's come before and letting go of everything you need to do. To just fully relax into this very place, knowing that this moment is exactly enough and has everything you need in it. The Holy Presence Spirit is right here, right now. And know, too, that you are good enough as you are, exactly as you are right now, absolutely good enough. And now start to breathe as if you were a dying person and you don't know how many more breaths you even have, that each one of these breaths becomes so precious, not knowing if it's your last breath or if you have five more breaths, but just fully coming into the breath, this very breath, and breathing the preciousness of this air, the preciousness of this moment, the preciousness of this life that is. And recognize that everything you have ever done is gone. Nothing, no judgment, no self-criticism. It's okay, we make mistakes. We fall down, we screw up. We're forgiven. It's okay. We can do better. We will do better. It's okay. And I'd like you to say to yourself these words, out loud or inside yourself. Even though I have screwed up and messed up and made a million mistakes, I completely love and accept myself right now. Even though I have done what I may think were horrible and terrible things to myself and to other people, and to other animals, maybe, and to the earth, maybe, I completely love and accept myself right now. I completely love and accept myself right now. I am good enough. I am more than good enough. I am a being of light, presence. I am a child of God. And I will probably make more mistakes. And even though I will probably make more mistakes, I completely love and accept myself, totally, now. And breathe a few more breaths, the precious, simple act of breathing in, filling the life, filling the light, letting the light and the life in, and releasing. And releasing the self-judgment, and self-blame, and self-criticism. Letting the forgiveness in. Even you, you deserve it. It's for you.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WINA, Real Life with Jennifer Till, brought to you by Virginia National Bank. And if you're just joining us, Bodhi B is my guest this morning, and he's with us from Maui. And thank you for that lovely practice.
You're welcome.
Bodhi, how do we move from that place of judgment to the place of what I call radical self-acceptance?
Well, the simple answer and most direct answer is we become more vigilant at the doorway of our mind, of our mental thinking, so that when we start to go into the tapes of judgment and self-criticism and being less than who we truly are, that we stop the thinking, we stop the patterns, we stop the tapes, and we shift into the truth. And the truth can start with simply breathing and coming into presence, and the other part of it is that we disconnect ourselves from the culture, the Western culture pattern that says we're not good enough unless we buy this or we achieve this or we travel here or we collect this. That we disconnect from what's really a broken, dysfunctional culture that needs us to think we need to keep shopping in order to be happy. So those two pieces, I think, are huge to break out of the cultural mode and break out of the mind the mind stuff that we identify with all day long. That's who we think we are. We think we're the person that's too fat. We think we're the person that's not good enough. We think we're the person that nobody will love, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so we have to stand at the door of the mind to stop those patterns and recreate new healthy patterns that say, hey, we are in fact children of God, and the only unforgiveness is that which I is the place where I'm holding myself, and I'm free to be born again in this next moment. That's exactly what born again is, that in this next moment I can choose to drop all of that stuff and come into my true being, to listen to hear what is my purpose. You know, why am I alive today? How can I serve? How can I give to my community? I guess the third piece would be to stop thinking about yourself so much. I think the more you think about yourself, the more unhappy you are.
I'd like to circle back toward the beginning of our conversation when you were talking about the gap in this giving away of the work of family and community to this monetized culture that we live in, to industry around death and dying. You talked about a gap between when the body dies and then the next time we see the body, it's either embalmed or it's been cremated. And while I have a clearer picture now of your vision, your realized vision of how we as community and family can help support somebody in the dying process, will you talk to us about after the body's dead? What can we do?
Well, home funerals is a movement that's coming back in America. And an example of home funerals are... I'll bring a cardboard coffin over. That's usually what somebody is cremated in, for example. But you can be buried in a cardboard box in most cemeteries. And I'll bring the cardboard box over to the home, sometimes even before the person dies, if they'd like to have the box in the home. And the person who's dying and or the family members and friends will take that plain, cardboard box and turn it into something that's unique and specific to that person, with photographs, with flowers, with glue guns and paints and magic markers and everything else you could imagine, and transform that cardboard box into something a beautiful work of art that's very connected and meaningful to the dying person or to the dead person.
You know, when you said cardboard box, I had the immediate question was, why cardboard? And now I get it. I love that.
Well, that's one example. Now I'm making inexpensive wooden coffins because I realized most coffins are, like the cheapest coffin on Maui, I think is $1,200. And so I thought there ought to be a $300-$500 coffin. So I've actually started to make wooden coffins, and in fact, I've been working on a few this week, and I'm trying to trying to bridge this whole gap. And so I'm making a coffin that's a coffin table, and I'm making a coffin that's a bookcase. And I talk about making friends with your coffin before you're in it.
Oh, yeah.
So again, to kind of disempower this a mystique and mystery around it all, and make friends with it. So sometimes after somebody has died, we've then turned the bed into a shrine, and we've asked the family and supported the family and friends to bring flowers and candles and photos and objects meaningful to that person, and really create a shrine around that body. To not only honor the body itself for having carried this being through this life, but honoring the soul and supporting its passage onwards. And I try to stay pretty vague about what onwards means, because because to me it's a mystery. It's a beautiful mystery, and I don't see it as an end, but I keep it in the world of mystery so people can people have their own views about it. And I think what's their life before death is more important to me than what is their life after death. So then sometimes we'll keep that body at home for a day, sometimes 2 or 3 days, and maybe one afternoon we'll invite all of that person's community to come over to sit with that body, to pray, to laugh, to tell stories, to cry, to connect, to pray with and for this person. And sometimes these people want to draw and paint and add their heart and presence to that painting, to that creation, to that coffin. And I've seen it transform people who have come into the home absolutely devastated, and to be able to move those emotions through drawing and painting and glue guns on a coffin, I've seen it change people immensely. So then, maybe after that, we'll the family will make we'll pad this cardboard box or this coffin, you know, pillows and maybe something specific to that the person wanted to go. And then we now have an old hearse, and we'll drive, and sometimes we'll pack a number of the family or friends into the hearse, or we'll caravan down and excuse me. And now we've worked out an arrangement with one of the local mortuaries where if the person's going to be cremated, that we can accompany the body all the way to the cremation chamber, slide the body in, and then maybe one of the family members will press the button that'll start the fire. So we participate, and we support the family and the community as much as they want to participate in the whole process, from washing the body, oiling and anointing the body, dressing the body, creating the shrine, inviting the community, you know, creating this sacred space for people to step into. It's transformative to come sit at home with a dead body. And sometimes you feel the soul still hovering, and sometimes that spirit, that soul took off pretty quick. And it's powerful and transformative for everybody, pretty much. And you see, when you're at a memorial service, it's like what happens. If you think about it, we read about people dying all the time, and we're kind of jaded to it. 1,000 people died here, hundreds of people died here. We read about it every day all over the world. It's happening, and we're almost immune to it. But when one person close to us dies, something happens to just about everybody. I've seen something happens. We're kind of shaken. Death has gotten close to us. It's not in the newspaper anymore. It's kind of come into our home. And so what happens, we tend to get very fragile and raw, and life all of a sudden takes on much more of a preciousness and a presence about it, and it kind of cuts out all the crap. And when you go to a memorial, if you're in a room with 100 or 200 people and everybody is in that state, you feel how powerful it is, that and there's no garbage. It's all authentic and to the core, and that's powerful, and that's beautiful. And that's what happens in these homes when people come and gather around a dear friend or a relative that's died, that's lying in state in that way. So that's kind of some view, some piece of, you know, a glimpse into what happens. And then the idea now is we're looking for a way to create a place where people could dig a hole and plant a tree over a body, and that's happening in some places now in the country. Where a cemetery is no longer just a land that's being taken out of the public domain and filled with gravestones and crypts, and really it has one single purpose. And now most cemeteries require you to have a concrete or a plastic grave liner, meaning a shell covering the coffin, so that the ground doesn't sink, to make it easy for them to keep mowing. And so it's a different, that's an old paradigm that doesn't work, and most cemeteries now are toxic waste dumps from all the embalming fluid and heavy metals and concrete that are in the soil. So So now the new paradigm, which is not so new, it's just new because it hasn't been around in 150 years. But you know, you bury Grandpa in the backyard and plant a tree, and so now there's this vision of creating a cemetery that's also a park, that's also open space, that's also a place for reforestation and land restoration. A place that, because it's open space, is now protected and kept in the commons for multi-purpose forever. So those are the kind of pieces that we're moving towards as we invite death to the table, as we stop basically living in aversion, denial, and avoidance. And if you want to live in aversion, denial, and avoidance, which is really what most people in America are choosing, because it's like, I don't want to think about it. I mean, how many of you have advanced health care directives? If you don't have advanced health care directive, then to a certain degree, you're in avoidance. And we live in the most advanced culture probably in the history of the world for supporting us in being in avoidance and aversion, because every possible distraction is being sold all day long on TV, et cetera, et cetera. But in fact, if you decide to take a different route and recognize that this body is going to die, and I don't know when, and there's no scientific evidence that it won't be tonight, then maybe that's information that could be useful in how I live my life today. No doubt it is. And if you wake up in the morning and you do, as a Buddhist practice, you wake up in the morning and you look at this little birdie on your shoulder and you say, is this the day I'm going to die? Mm-hmm. And it's not about waiting for the birdie to answer you. It's about willing to ask the question. Mm-hmm. That'll transform your day. Mm-hmm. Is this the day I'm going to die? Is this the day that people around me are going to die? Because stuff happens, and usually a lot of stuff happens all of a sudden.
Bodhi, this is such a wonderful conversation, and I would like to invite you to come back again sometime soon. And we just have about a minute, and there are a couple of questions that I have that may or may not be able to get answered in a minute or so. But, you know, you talked about embalming, and are we required by law to be embalmed?
No. No, I don't. As far as I know, there's no state in the country that mandates that you have to be embalmed.
Okay.
Under certain conditions, if you want to take a body across state lines, you may be required to be embalmed. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's an airline's decision. Funeral homes and mortuaries sometimes require it if you want to have a public viewing. But as far as I know, there's no law in any state that requires a body to be embalmed. And embalming is a very toxic practice.
Yeah, yeah.
And even embalmers have a higher cancer rate than pretty much everybody else.
And what about, you talked about burying Grandpa in the backyard, basically. Can we do that?
Well, that's a state thing that you'd have to look into. Like, for example, here in Hawaii, you can bury Grandpa in your backyard, but you need to get a special permit to do so, to okay. designate a portion of your land as cemetery. And that's only in the last, probably 50 years ago, you didn't need a permit to bury Grandpa in your backyard in Hawaii, because the Hawaiians have been doing that for a long time.
Yeah. Well, that's about all the time we have this morning. On behalf of all of us here at Real Life, thank you so much, Bodhi B., for joining us this morning. And I am hoping that you'll want to come back. It's such a rich conversation.
I really appreciated your questions and the direction you took us. And I'd come back. I had a good time with you today.
You'd give up another bike ride sometime?
Well, I don't know. We might have to arrange a different time of the day. But yeah, okay. I'd give up another bike ride.
Okay. All right. And thank you for spending part of your weekend with us this morning. Remember to log on to jennifertill.com, where you can connect with other like-minded people and have a conversation about, a continuing conversation about death. Until next Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, remember to ask yourself, what's the kindest thing I can do for me right now? See you next week.